Welcome back to The Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2, and 98.3 FM. This is the Insight segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Earlier this month, the U.S. saw the biggest bank failure since the mortgage crisis of 2008. Both Silicon Valley Bank in California and Signature Bank in New York closed. First Republic Bank stumbled in San Francisco. And Swiss Bank Credit Suisse was taken over by UBS to save it from crumbling. What's going on here? What do these bank problems mean for you and me? Well, tonight we're going to try to make it make sense. Joining me to talk about this are financial advisor Muriel Garr and Sam Fuller, Associate Commissioner with the D.C. Department of Insurance, Securities, and Banking. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Muriel, always a pleasure to have you on the program. And Sam, welcome to the program for the first time.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Sure thing. Muriel, I want to start with you, and let's talk about some basics. What happened to these banks? Did the same thing happen to all of them?
I think, and Harold, thank you for allowing me to spend some time with you this evening.
Sure.
The simplest way to break it down for non-bankers to understand is that it's similar to our own household budgets and checkbooks. We have income and we have outcome, or assets and liabilities. Most folks think that when you make deposits into banks, that money just sits there. But the whole role of a bank, which is a business, is to make money. And they use money to make money. When the value of their money or their portfolio outweighs their liabilities or the debt, then there becomes a problem. And so in each of these instances, the portfolios of the financial institutions did not equal what they needed to equal. And so in those instances, individuals start pulling their dollars because, of course, we want to make sure when we go to the bank or when we get paid that there's money there to pay us. As they start pulling deposits, or what we call doing a run on deposits, it creates a greater deficit because the institutions no longer have the capital to, or the dollars on deposit, to fulfill their obligations. And at the same time, we have those who are investing in those institutions, and we invest by purchasing shares of stock, which makes us somewhat of an owner. But the stock only has value if the business has value. And so when we see that the value of the business starts to go down and is no longer as valuable anymore, then we want to recoup as much debt as possible. When we start pulling that money out, which is known as equity, we create even a greater challenge. And so that's what we've seen in the last couple of weeks, and it has caused a lot of uneasiness in our communities, because people are wondering if my money is safe. And then the next thing they're wondering is, how is it going to impact some of the basic things, particularly if you're a small business, you have a line of credit? Because when times get tough, then we start, let's think about it like our household, when money gets short, we start cutting back and budgeting more on how we spend our money.
Mm-hmm.
In the financial sector, when there are these challenges, then credit starts to tighten. And one of the things that I know when I was younger, I never read was the fine print on either my credit card opportunities or my line of credit. And that fine print basically says that the issuer can call or ask for their money back at any given time, even if you fulfill the terms, and they can also decrease your limit. And so all of these things are what many of us are seeing in the last couple of weeks and trying to figure out not only what happened, but how it happened and how it can impact us, particularly when we're talking about our community banks. And those are the banks that have been in our communities, have provided access to credit, been there when the big banks didn't want to come in. There's a concern. Are they going to be there for us? And yeah. So it has created a level of uneasiness.
You know, Sam, I introduced you as the Associate Commissioner with the D.C. Department of Insurance, Securities, and Banking. That's not a department that we hear a lot about. What is that department, and what is your role?
Okay, yes. I'm the Associate Commissioner for the Banking Bureau with the department. We're the chief financial regulator for financial services that are offered in the District of Columbia. So we regulate insurance companies, securities dealers and brokers, and the mortgage industry, and also our state chartered banks in the district. We have two state chartered banks in the district, Industrial Bank and Founders Bank. There are two community banks that operate here in the District of Columbia.
Mm-hmm. But I'm sure, you know, in your position, things don't operate in a vacuum, in that you do have to have kind of a literal global view of what's happening. Certainly banking doesn't end at the D.C. line in Virginia and Maryland. So,
correct.
So was this just an American problem? As I mentioned in the very beginning, Credit Suisse, anyone who watches CBC, that's a household name. But if you don't, the only thing you know about Swiss banking accounts is what you hear in a James Bond movie. But, you know, with that said, when you hear that, you know, Credit Suisse was in trouble and had to be bought by UBS, what impact, you know, does that have on our issues here?
It does have an impact here on our problems. But I think that the point that we want to make is to make sure that everyone knows that the American banking system is safe and a sound banking system. And, you know, the banking system is the foundation for economic growth and a strong economy. And so with the problems that we had out with the banks in California, the state and federal regulators acted very quickly to make sure to protect the bank customers and to ensure the safety and soundness of the financial system. So I think what's happening in Switzerland is something that maybe a byproduct of what happened here, and that the banks were doing things that were a little bit more risky than what they should be doing.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about these bank failures and a bank crisis that reared its ugly head earlier this month. If you have a question, if you have a comment about what impact this has on your money, give us a call. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. One of the other things, of course, that happened today was that the Federal Reserve raised interest rates. It's the ninth time since March of 2022. We've been hearing about this, you know, for the past year now. I'll start with you, Sam. What impact does this have on this bank issue, if any at all?
Sure. The decision to continue to raise rates comes as the Federal Reserve is kind of between a rock and a hard place. They're trying to tame inflation, but also trying to stabilize the uncertainty in the financial industry right now. The rate hike means it will cost more to borrow for banks, and also that will filter down to actual consumers as well. In the efforts to try and tame inflation a little bit, the rate hike is trying to encourage people to save money and reduce the money supply in circulation, which tends to help lower inflation. So consumers might want to delay any big item, big ticket purchases in the short term, and this will also affect businesses when they might want to be looking to expand. I may not want to do that right now with the rising rate environment.
Mm-hmm. So, Muriel, we first heard about this issue regarding Silicon Valley Bank during the first week of March. But why did this happen in the first place? You touched on, you know, risky investments, but since the the shuttering of Washington Mutual back in 2008, we haven't really heard a whole lot about problems with the bank. Silicon Valley Bank, certainly not a household name in this part of the country, but it is called the biggest failure since 2008. So what happened? Why did this happen in the first place?
Well, first, let me say, and I agree with our other guests, that it's important that our listeners understand that our banking system is down. So we don't want to incite any fear and have people start going and pulling out money and putting it under their mattress and all that because it's not safe. But the other reality of it is that bank failures do occur. They just don't often hit the front page of the newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
And bank failures often occur because there's an issue with capital, and that issue with capital is tied to leadership. And in this instance, what some individuals are saying is that the regulators, because every financial institution is regulated, they're either regulated by the FDIC, they're regulated by the Office of Comptroller of the Currency, they're regulated by the Federal Reserve, they're regulated by the National Credit Union Administration, or in the District of Columbia, they're regulated by DSB. These regulators have a responsibility to go in and evaluate what we call the safety and soundness of that institution. They have their responsibility is to go in and look at their books, simply stated. Look at their books. Does the cash that's coming in equal to cash that needs to go out? How are your investments? Are those investments netting the returns that need to be returned in order for this institution to be sound and manage their liabilities? In the instance of SVB, there's a couple of things. We're focusing on the fact that this institution failed, but we're not focusing on the fact that what this institution was doing was providing access to capital to startup businesses, primarily in the IT industry, IT space, that many other financial institutions would not necessarily provide that capital before because it was risky. And so there's a plus and a negative to SVP. Now, the plus is that they were providing that capital and they were able to underwrite those loans. The negative is when you look at their portfolio, perhaps they were doing a little too much of that, which is what created the challenge. And then there are some that said, because the regulators they're our friend. They have the responsibility of coming in and saying, yes, we tested this. Yes, you're doing what you're doing. Yes, you're safe and you're ready to go for the next 12 to 18 months. There's some that said that the regulators had started to see some issues as it pertained to their portfolio and how they were accounting for some of their investments that created some concern. Without being on the inside, I can't speak to that. But overall, the process of making sure that an institution is able to fulfill its charter, there was some bump in the road that created a concern, and which is how we got to where we are today, not only with SVE, but with the other institutions where now the regulators are going in with a more intense eye and saying, let us make sure we haven't missed anything. Because if you think back to what we've been hearing in the last couple of weeks, one of the first things that were eliminated with SVB was the management.
Yeah.
Because management is held accountable for their actions. So, you know, we often talk about our inability to get loans and how difficult banks can be to deal with, because they can be at times. But we don't understand that those same banks are regulated in somebody else. We call it Big Brother or their regulatory industry. has the responsibility of making sure that they don't end up shutting their doors.
I need to take a break, but when we come back, more about the bank failures and your money. What's going on here? Is your money safe? What should you do? Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm. That's on WHUR. This conversation continues on SiriusXM in just a few seconds. Stay with us. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking about the recent bank failures and what it means to you. My guests are financial advisor Muriel Garr and Sam Fuller, Associate Commissioner with the D.C. Department of Insurance, Securities, and Banking. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or you can find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sam, Muriel was talking about, the regulators, and the like. And I remember after the mortgage crisis, after the Great Recession, there was the Dodd-Frank federal law that was implemented to, for lack of a better term, to keep an eye on banks. We do know, and, without getting political, that, President Trump did loosen the strings on Dodd-Frank during his administration. And I am certainly not a financial expert, but I do know that just from the coverage of this, that Dodd-Frank was supposed to really make sure that there was no chaos and foolishness with the banks. And now, but even in some small way, we are here again. So, in reference to that, does Dodd-Frank need to be re-strengthened? What can be done to prevent this kind of thing from happening again?
I think Dodd-Frank could be tightened a little bit from a regulatory standpoint. I think regulators, it's very important that we continue to watch closely at what banks are doing and look at for any signs of risk and take whatever action is needed to make sure that we don't end up in a situation like this where we have a bank closure. I think Ms. Garr mentioned earlier, banks closing, it happens from time to time, but it only makes the headlines when it's the larger institutions. I think the Dodd-Frank was intended to prevent this from the larger institutions. We had back in 2008, banks too big to fail when the federal government really had to come in and bail out the financial industry. And I think we need to make sure that doesn't continue to be the case where we have banks that are too big to fail. And one way we can do that, I think, is by using our community banks. They're very important to the banking system, and I think they're often overlooked. So I think that's one area that we, from a consumer standpoint, that we can do.
Mm-hmm. I spoke earlier about UBS buying Credit Suisse, but even here in the United States, when this happened, other big banks, Sam, essentially rescued other banks, putting in billions of dollars to shore them up. We saw some of that as it relates to First Republic Bank. Is that a good thing or a bad thing? Because I know you remember the big federal government rescue that we saw during 2008.
I can't say it's a good thing or a bad thing. I think it's a little bit too early to tell. But I think that the big banks and the smaller banks are realize that they're all interconnected. So to prevent contagion and the spread of the problem, I think it was that was one reason that the bigger banks stepped in and helped the First Republic.
What would have happened if they had not? Would we have seen other banks, even more banks, fail?
That could have been a possibility. I think that's why the federal government stepped in so quickly to close the two banks, the Signature Bank and SVB, to prevent any an outbreak, if you will.
Mm-hmm. So then, you know, Muriel, this brings me back to that question again. If the first two were SVB and Signature Bank, but there were other banks, as Sam is suggesting, that may have failed without the help of other big banks. So if that is the case, then the SVB situation and the Signature Bank are not isolated issues, which suggests to me that other banks were doing things that may have also been risky. Am I on target here?
Your point is valid, but I think one thing that we haven't shared, and we're assuming that our listeners know, but they don't, is that banks not only take the deposits that they receive and then put that money back on the street, banks also borrow money. So it's not just Dodd-Frank that was an issue of concern that helped us to get to where we are today. It was the cost of money. If you look back, remember, we were working in a negative interest rate environment, and everybody was happy. They were clapping their hands, tapping their feet.
Wait a minute. Let me stop you. What is a negative interest rate environment? What does that mean?
So banks borrow money in order to loan money. So under the administration, prior to the current administration, the goal was to continue to reduce what's called the Fed fund rate, which is the interest rate that banks pay when they borrow money from the Fed in order to put money out on the street. And so it was actually less than zero for banks to borrow money. So now let's replace a bank with Muriel. When money is free, then Muriel's desire to be a better steward of that money is minimized. Muriel's just giving out money here. Her policy around whether or not she's going to give it to a girlfriend and never pays her back is a little different because it really didn't cost her anything to get that money. Now, when the cost of money starts to go up and Muriel's behavior has not changed, then we have a problem. So if you think about it, what has happened in the last 18 months? We started increasing the cost to borrow money. Part of that was related to issues associated with COVID and supply chain shortages, which meant that the cost of goods and services were going up. Simple, so it's not to be technical. So we had people going out and buying things, but because the things that they wanted to buy were reduced as far as quantity, the cost went up. And so we needed to bring that, we needed to control that. So the Fed used what their tools were. Well, if we make the cost of money go up, then you're not going to be as inclined to use credit in order to do that. And so the banks are also in that same space. So to get to your point, so we had 11 big banks pooled together, $30 billion, to keep this one bank from going under. Well, for all intents and purposes, that one bank went from $100-something a share to like $16 a share a stock. One. So that's a huge problem there. They lost a considerable amount of deposits. And so the question is, just that $30 billion, did that really stabilize that one institution? And did that really curtail or stop any other bank failures from happening anywhere else? Because a part of that $30 billion of infusion of cash was to create a calmness within the consumer base that started saying, I want to make sure that I got my money when I need my money. Yeah. Now, as our other guest has said, Our community banks have always been here for us. And when we're talking, and I know, Harold, you have an international show that's just not in the D.C. market. But for those of us that are in the D.C. market, we're proud to say that we have one of the oldest African-American-owned community banks in our community, Industrial Bank.
Right. Okay.
Family-owned. Not only that, they are an integral part of our community, woven in our community. What does that mean, Muriel? Does that mean I just got a deposit and they give me a loan? No, that means that the leadership actually is engaged in the efforts that take place in the community. They know their neighborhoods. They know their people. And so they're not out making risky loans, et cetera, that would put the value of that institution at risk and put yours and my deposits at risk. So as you're seeing these things that go on, it's important that we educate ourselves as consumers. One, nobody, and it was funny, I heard you say, nobody really knows what DSB is. DSB, like, operates under the cover. That's because people aren't taking the time to find out what DSB does and read the financial reports on the bank.
DSB, because meaning, people, hold on, DSB, meaning the D.C. Department of Insurance, Securities, and Banking, that because nobody knows what DSB is. So let me just make sure we clarify that, but please continue.
Thank you. Keep it, you're absolutely right.
I had to say what it was because
you have to pull me back.
I had to pull you and Sam back. But please go continue, Muriel.
But so what are some things that we need to do? One, each financial institution, whether it's a credit union or a bank, they have a regulator that's looking over their shoulder. And so when you are what I call dating a financial institution, deciding whether or not you're going to put your money in there, deciding even if you're going to get a loan from them, it's important that you read up on that institution. And the reports that the regulators do are public reports. You can Google them. As a matter of fact, the institutions have to have access to those reports on their website. You get an opportunity to actually read their financial statement. And so some people say, it's all so confusing. I can't really understand it. But this is what you want to look for. You want to make sure that the pluses are greater than the minuses. Real simple. And if the pluses start to look too close to the minuses, then you need to ask some questions and decide whether or not I want to bank with them. But the other thing the regulators have done, and as you know, Harold, after they came in and did the rescue, you know that the FDIC insurance had been increased to $250,000 based on how the accounts are titled. You know that Janet Yellen came out and said that the FDIC, the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, is going to insure all depositors, which means that no depositor is going to lose any money.
I do want to... I do want to go back to that. But before I do, I need to go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brendan, calling from Maryland. Thanks for hanging on, Brendan. What's on your mind?
Yes, hello. So did I hear correctly, Harold and member of the panel, Muriel?
Yeah, Muriel, and also Sam Fuller, yeah.
And Sam, hi. So I just want to say that I appreciate the information being shared on this specific radio channel. As a white male, I just appreciate that this information is being openly discussed and shared with an audience that is, I would say, a mostly black audience. I listen to this radio channel, and knowing other black individuals, being friends with black individuals, I have picked up on they have questioned a lot of the financial workings of banking and whether their money's safe. And I feel that this is very helpful to have the openness being shared here tonight. And there is fear talking to people that are following the situation about, is their money safe? And I heard that being discussed.
Yeah.
So long story short, my gratitude is coming from a social standpoint, and I'm also a teacher, and this is important information that I try to share with my students. Like I've spoken to them about the importance of looking into starting a Roth IRA in their earlier years. So I just appreciate what you're doing here and the urgency of the information.
Well, Brendan, thank you so much for your comment. I appreciate it myself, and thank you so much for listening. And certainly not to get too far afield, you know, Sam and Muriel, but I think Brendan does make, you know, an excellent point, not just for the Black community, but for a lot of, you know, just hardworking people where, you know, their knowledge about the complexities, and I count myself in that, even though this is something that I watch, but the complexities of this situation will have your eyes kind of glaze over, which brings me back, you know, Sam, to this point that Muriel was just making about, for example, you know, we know that the FDIC is guaranteeing deposits for up to $250,000. But, you know, what if I happen to be a particularly prosperous person and say I have $270,000 in a bank that was troubled? Is my $270,000 in trouble?
Well, right now, the FDIC has said that they are foregoing that limit for right now. And if you had $270,000 and it wasn't titled in such a way that it would traditionally be covered, you're going to get that money. Your deposit is insured. But I just want to say one thing real quick, Harold, before you flip to Sam. I think we also have to understand, particularly whether we're an individual of means, of color or non-color, that having a conversation about money doesn't will happen a lot of times in a lot of communities at the dinner table.
Mm-hmm.
And so, and money, you know, sometimes people make simple things complicated so they can make them look like they have arrived when others have not. And I personally feel, and Harold, you've heard me say this, that we've overcomplicated this thing called money as a way to keep particularly people of color or low resource people in bondage.
Yeah.
And so when we come across those individuals in our circle, it's important for us to simplify it so that they understand it is not that they have a lack of knowledge, but it is just that the industry has not created a quick, simple, easy way or a KISS method for people to understand this thing called money.
Yeah. Sam, talk to me briefly about, you know, Muriel talked about Industrial Bank, for example. It's a community bank. It's been around for generations and generations.
Well, over 80 years, in fact.
Yeah. And so, you know, but is there a difference between, you know, your community or state banks versus commercial banks?
No, your community bank is typically a commercial bank. But like I think Muriel said earlier, the community bank knows its community, knows its, the neighborhoods, and it's usually well ingrained in its community. So that's why I think it's very important to support our community banks.
Mm-hmm.
The big banks, they're fine as well for consumers, but the community banks are, you know, they're their backbone. They may make the loans that the bigger bank, like a Wells Fargo or Bank of America, may not make to someone that's looking to start a small business.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very key. Given the importance of small businesses throughout the nation. So I think that's why it's a very important reason to support our community banks nationwide.
Are commercial banks or the bigger banks concerned in the wake of this crisis?
I think so. I think you have to take a hard look at the banks have to take a hard look at what they're doing. From a regulator standpoint, we always want banks to be able to mitigate any risk that they have. I think banks have to take a very hard look at what they're doing, anything that may be a little bit risky or give them some exposure to the problems that we saw the last couple of weeks. Also, I think it's also key, it's also on the regulators to make sure that banks are doing what they're supposed to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not pointing any fingers at any federal or state regulators, But I think it's very important that we keep on top of the banks as well.
You know, Muriel, I think, in my family, I think historically, my parents have always used just one bank. And I think for a lot of, black households, if you've been living in one place, for example, for a really, really long time, you may just use one bank. I, having lived in several cities during the course of my career, have my money in several banks. So, I've got $5 over here and $8.32 over here. Is having your money in several banks financially more sound than just using one bank, Muriel?
Well, it's a financial strategy that you can definitely use, particularly if you are of means and you have a considerable amount of money. But if we take it to the basics, banking is like a relation. It is a relationship. It's a relationship with people. So you're going to want to do your banking with a company that makes you feel like you count, right? And so you may have three or four banks in your neighborhood, but if you walk in, they won't even look at you directly in the eye, and then they act like they can't halfway meet you, halfway service you. And so you're going to just spread your money around just because. It is a relationship. The FDIC insurance and the NCUA, it creates an opportunity for you to have money, and you can know that up to whatever that limit may be, when the limit really comes in play, that your money is going to be there when you need it. But what you also want to do is be banking with people that are going to be there when you need them. We've automated the banking system such that in the underwriting process, and that is when you apply for a loan, somebody looks at, how much money you make, how well you kept your promise, because credit is a promise to pay, what's the likelihood that you're going to pay us back. They've automated that and taken the human person out of it. And so when we talk about commercial banks, the larger commercial banks, one of the things that people say is that they've moved away from the people part of it, and they're more about the money part. When we talk about the community banks, they're more about the people part at the same time as they do the money part. So a long answer to a question, you should bank where people value you and where what they do is aligned with the things that you believe in.
But that seems to me to be such a stretch nowadays, to your point, because in one sense or another, banking is like dealing with the airlines. They nickel and dime you for everything, as the banks
That's
do.
That's true. A bank is a business.
And I get that. And the last time I flew, I was not feeling valued. Okay, and so even with the banks, like you said, a lot of that stuff is automated. You call, you can't get anyone on the phone. And so...
Okay, so Harold, let me stop you.
Yeah.
So that means that you are not feeling value.
No.
From the customer service standpoint. Okay, so then if that's the case, then you're going to want to go to a bank where perhaps they're not offshoring basic things like customer service. And so when you call, the phone is going to be answered. You'll also want to look at the banks. The banks are regulated in all kinds of areas, to include what they do in the community, how many branches they have in neighborhoods, what are their hours, all of those things. And so I say we should shop banks like we would shop our spouse. If we're in the market for that person that we're going to live with for the rest of our lives, then don't laugh at me, Harold.
I'm not. No, that's Sam laughing at you, not me. No, I'm listening. I'm listening intently.
This is what happens when you're with two fabulous.
No, trust me. I wasn't laughing. I was listening intently. But please continue your point.
We should apply that same scrutiny when we're looking to do business with a financial institution. It should not be, oh, they gave me a loan, so that's why I'm going to bank with them. Because they may have given you a loan today, but then when something happens and you need them to do a modification and they act like they don't know you, then that means they really didn't value you in that relationship.
That so is, I think that is so true. First. I think that is so true. And speaking of scrutiny, Sam, I want to ask you this because it occurred to me years ago, and I think this was even before the Great Recession. I had a friend who worked at a bank, and on the occasions when we would talk about the work that she did, she was a manager. She was always talking about pulling her hair out over stress tests that the bank had to undergo. What does that mean, Sam?
Stress tests is an opportunity for a bank to, it's a quantitative look at the bank and evaluation of the bank and its capital and its other financial measures. I think stress tests that got away from that a little bit with in the case of SVB and the other Signature Bank, and we see what happened with those two banks. So it's usually done with the bigger banks. So most of the smaller community banks is not an issue. It's not something that's done with those smaller banks.
Yeah,
but it's a very good exercise to make sure a bank is where it needs to be from a capital standpoint.
Yeah, and I was about to say, it seems that in every other case, whether it's your health or your family or anything else you do, stress is not good. But based on what we've seen happen this month, perhaps those stress tests for banking institutions, big and small, may give us a view into whether or not a bank is doing risky things that would, once again, put its viability in jeopardy.
Correct. And I think it's a balance of making sure that if a bank is doing something that's a little risky, from a regulatory standpoint, we have to make sure and say, hey, if this goes all the way to the left, what does that do? How does that impact your operations? How does that impact what you're doing in the community? So we had to look at it from a if it goes all the way south like this did, and we can make sure the bank puts some measures in place to correct something like that before it goes south.
Yeah, let us hope not. Muriel, I've got about a minute or so left. Some final thoughts about what has happened this month with SVB, Credit Suisse, and the like. What does all of this portend for the rest of this year when it comes to these banking situations and our money?
So some closing thoughts real quick. Any consumer, whether you're banking with a large commercial bank or a community bank, one, make sure you understand the credit agreements that you're engaged in. If you've got credit cards, in particular if you're a small business owner, you've got a line of credit, read the fine print. Understand that the financial institution, whoever issued the credit, does have rights. And those rights could include lowering your limits, even though you've paid and you've always paid early, also lowering the amount of available credit in a line of credit. So you need to understand that. Don't get angry if you see that happens, but you need to understand that it could happen. And in understanding that it could happen, we always say that you need to be prepared and have the financial resources so that you can sustain your household and your business. And so those resources are what I call cash that you're not depending on someone to approve you to get in order to use it, if that makes sense. Your regulator should be on speed dial on Google. So you should know who they are for the institutions that you bank with, and you should make the time to read the reports about your institution. And then if you have questions about your institution, large commercial or small community bank, guess what? Your regulators are on 1-800-REGULATOR. Fill in whatever that phone number is. they will actually answer the questions for you. And then if you have a problem with a financial institution, Harold, you've heard me say it before, Consumer Finance Protection Bureau is also your friend. Finally, your mattress is not safe.
Yeah, how about that? Yeah, yeah.
The freezer is not safe.
Yeah, none of those things.
None of those things are safe. So if you're going to run on anything, go run on your health, but keep your money in an insured financial institution.
Yeah, after this conversation, I think I'm going to have to find a place for my $270,000, or is that $2.70? One of the two. I'll figure it out. Muriel Garr, Sam Fuller, thank you both for talking to us. I appreciate it. That is
thank
the Daily
you.
Drum for
thank
this
you,
Wednesday, March 22nd. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.